The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James. Here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
That's right. It's another edition of Raised by Wolves. We are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Manny Hill here. Derek James is here as well. Once again, we're in different locations, but that's okay. We have our wonderful technology here to where we can still do a podcast.
As I'm if doing we're this live from my balcony where I'm sunbathing in the 40-degree sun.
Right.
But really.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It was like the reason why we were in different spots last week is because it was so cold and we were getting crazy weather.
Several inches
and it was,
of snow.
Yeah, yeah. But now it's just, hey, just timing works out for it and everything. But so lots to talk about this week. The Wolves, the last time we did a podcast, the Wolves were playing really well and they were in the middle of a winning streak and a nice homestand and coming off a nice win against the Cavs and Oklahoma City, and they had beaten New Orleans the previous weekend, and so they were riding high, and now here we are potting again a week later, and they're on a two-game losing streak, and we're sort of looking around like, what is going on? What's wrong?
Yeah, they really needed that Orlando win. I mean, just to come out flat like that was kind of disappointing. I mean, it's not the end of the world, because, I mean, as I wrote about this week, San Antonio has lost to three of the league's worst teams.
Including Orlando.
Yeah, exactly. Houston's lost to Memphis twice, I think. And the Warriors have another, you know, bad loss in there. I mean, so it happens. And even though, like, if you can say, like, oh, well, they had bad losses earlier in the year. Yeah, like, the Phoenix games suck. But, like, we can't hold up the Indiana-Detroit games as bad losses anymore. Like, they didn't play well, but, you know, the season has shown that Indiana and Detroit are actually good teams. They're not great, but they're above 500. They're good basketball teams. And so you're going to lose those games. And I mean, I think what was really interesting more so to me to find out was how they would do against, you know, the Rockets, since the last time they faced a team of that caliber was the Warriors in November. And that didn't go well. And it just seems to me like this Wolves team is just not equipped to hang with the Warriors and the Rockets, which is probably something we kind of already knew.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the three-point shooting is, I mean, and again, that's something else that we kind of knew was going to be sort of an issue going into this year, because we knew they hadn't really in the offseason. They added some players, obviously, and got better in terms of just overall talent. But we knew that 3-point shooting was going to be an issue, and that they were probably going to have some trouble against teams that are good 3-point shooting teams, like Golden State and like Houston. And we saw that on Thursday, where, you know, the Rockets are a team. They're going to throw up a lot of threes. They've got shooters all over the place. And if you can't go toe-to-toe, blow-for-blow with 3-point shooting with them, that they're more than likely going to beat you. So we kind of saw that. But I'm wondering, though, if, you know, it's interesting. I'm watching the game Thursday night. And, you know, Karl Anthony Towns is shooting these threes, and he's not making them. And
one for seven on the night from three.
Yeah, one for seven on the night. And he was 0-5 at halftime. And so they go to halftime, and, you know, the game was on TNT. And Chuck and Shaq start talking about how, well, he's got to stop shooting so many threes. And I'm thinking to myself, he's shooting 42% from three. Like, are you going to tell, you know, are you just going to look at Karl Anthony Towns and think because he's 7 feet tall that he's not supposed to be shooting threes? I mean, Dirk Nowitzki is one of the greatest shooters of all time, and he's 7 feet tall. I didn't hear anybody telling Dirk to stop shooting threes.
Well, can't you understand why Charles Barkley hates the 3-point shot? Because it didn't like him very much when he was playing either.
Yeah, and he wasn't particularly good at making threes. He would make a few, but he wasn't particularly good at it. But it just, it's mind-boggling to me that, you know, I hear them say that, You know, he needs to get the ball down low and post up more and all that. But then under the same breath, they're like, well, the Wolves need to play faster and they need to pick up the pace and speed things up. It's like you can't.
It's really hard to do both.
Yeah, it's really hard to do both. And I'm just, you know, and I like Charles and Shaq in terms of, you know, they go at it with each other and that show is great and they're entertaining and they're fun and stuff. But man, when Chuck starts to like try and like break it down, that's when I just start to like roll my eyes, kind of, you know, where it's just like, come on, Charles, like you know better than this, man. Like, come on.
Like, there are just so many broadcasters who, you know, they do their research and they would know things like, oh, Towns is shooting over 40% from three. He's 0-for-5 at halftime. Just having a bad night, or they're just not the right looks, right, rather than saying, oh, he needs to get away from that shot. Because like you said, you wouldn't tell Dirk to stop shooting threes in his prime if he was 0-for-5. You just say, oh, they're not going in, and they need to figure something else out or a way to get him better looks or something like that. You wouldn't just sit to call for him to eliminate the shot. I mean, it's just kind of one of those things that does bug me about it when you know. I mean, if Barkley hadn't come out and said, oh, I don't really watch the NBA, you know, I would be able to – that take would carry more weight with me. But, like, if you don't watch it, like, I don't know how I'm supposed to take that seriously.
Yeah, and it's not even like Towns was – taking bad shots. He was getting good looks from 3-point range. He just wasn't hitting them. And it's you know, it can be frustrating if, you know, you guys are taking good looks and they're just not going in, but it is kind of a make or miss league. And, you know, if you make shots, then you're going to be fine. If you don't make shots, even if they're good looks, then yeah, it's going to be tough. And that's kind of what happened with Cat last night. It's just, yeah, I don't know. It's weird to me that, you know, we sort of, guys like Charles, who are, you know, who can be funny and entertaining, but sometimes they just fall back into the back in my day type of thing. And it's like, Charles, not everybody is you. Not everybody is going to play the exact same way that you played, you know, and so I don't know.
Like Barkley in his prime, I mean, he's one of the best rebounders in the league.
Yes.
Could get into the lane at will in his prime when he was, you know, before injuries and all that. So, yeah, I probably don't want him camping out the three-point line anyway, and he should be inside. But not every player should play like Charles Barkley did, because they're not Charles Barkley, and very few players will play like Chuck. But do you think it's kind of weird that this team generally avoids three-pointers, and then they can play the Rockets, and all of a sudden, oh, we're going to take 24 of them. Like, they're aware that they don't take enough threes on a regular basis and that the rest of the league takes more, but they really need to play it up on certain nights. That just seems odd to me.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, you go back to the Brooklyn game, they took, what, 11? They went 1-for-11
in that game. And this is how they lose games, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they go 1-for-11 against Brooklyn, and then it's like suddenly, you know, we're playing the Rockets and they shoot a lot of threes, so we have to shoot a lot of threes too. And it's like, no, personally, I would like to see the Wolves take more 3-point shots, but I just want them to take more threes because that's kind of the way the NBA is being played now. You know,
and this isn't just talking about just chucking up 3-pointers for the sake of it, just creating more action that leads to 3-pointers.
Yeah.
And one thing that's starting to drive me crazy that Tom Thibodeau keeps repeating is, oh, 3-pointers lead to long rebounds. Well, I mean, people have done the research and it shows that long twos actually have a greater long rebound rate. And part of the problem is that you're actually closer to the basket and away from the break if there is a long rebound. So it's actually harder to defend off of a long rebound that the defense gets, because you're further back, and they have a clearer path to the basket and more momentum. But if you're at the three-point line, you have a long rebound, and the defense gets it, you're more likely to be able to get back and actually stop the break.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm totally with you. And it's weird because, I mean, how many times in the game against Houston, and we kind of saw this with Orlando too, where there's not enough action to set up 3-point shots, but there's just not a lot of action, period. And mm-hmm. it's bugging me because we hear Tom Thibodeau say this after every game, you know, guys are not cut, you know, we're not, when they lose and when they don't play well, when they have kind of a bad night offensively, we hear Tibbs say, well, they're not cutting and they're not moving enough. There's not enough action, that sort of thing. But it's like, okay, then why is it not happening? You know, why is a game like like last night happened where it is, you know, Jeff Teague dribbling and dribbling and dribbling and dribbling, and then you look over and Andrew Wiggins is just kind of standing there. And Karl Anthony Towns is just kind of standing there. And, you know, Jamal Crawford or whoever else might be on the floor is just kind of standing there. And then you look around and, like, if Jimmy Butler's on the floor, he's, like, the only one who's moving. He's the only one who's moving around. And, you know, I feel like, okay, if they're not going to be a great three-point shooting team, okay. But there's other ways to where you can get efficient shots and get good looks at the basket. But guys have to keep moving. I mean, Andrew Wiggins, he's got to move. You know, if he's not going to, you know, take a lot of three-point shots, he needs to move and cut and get to the basket. I mean, how many times have we talked about how dangerous he can be and how unstoppable he can be if he just cuts and drives to the basket more often? And sometimes he just sort of sits back on the three-point line on the left wing and he just sits there and he doesn't move for 24 seconds. It's really weird.
Well, some of the things that the Rockets do kind of remind me of the Timberwolves a little bit. For instance, they get to the line and they shoot it pretty well. I mean, last night they were 15 for 17. That's a good amount of attempts, too. Mm-hmm. And they had 48 points in the paint to 46. Like, this is what they do. They get it at the rim or it's a three-pointer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not taking the threes but you're taking a bunch of mid-range garbage, I mean, it's really just a model of inefficiency and you hope you get enough calls. Which to me isn't really a sustainable method for success. I mean, if you're getting to the rim regularly or you're getting good looks and taking a sufficient amount of threes, not even like a high volume. I mean, you can still do things to offset that. But, you know, to me, if you're not shooting that many three-pointers, you better be getting to the basket a lot. And you better be just, you know, killing it in the paint rather than just, you know, the long twos or the Jeff Teague floater specials that I'm really starting to grow tired of.
Yeah, and the other thing too is these long twos, Derek, that they're taking, they're not even it's not like they're running certain sets and certain plays to set up an open look. I mean, sometimes you'll see, you know, Taj Gibson get sort of a nice nice 18, 19 foot jumper, or Gorgui Dieng, same sort of thing where they find themselves open, but other than that, you're really not seeing a lot of plays where they set up a good mid-range shot. It's usually, you know, Jimmy Butler, you know, dribbling and trying to get around a guy and then pulling up from mid-range, which Jimmy's more than capable of making those kinds of shots, but those shots are usually contested. We know about Andrew Wiggins when he sort of falls in love with that range. Jeff Teague, same sort of thing. You know, Jamal Crawford, too, where even the mid-range shots that they're taking, a lot of them tend to be contested, and those are just not the best type of shots you want to be taking.
No, absolutely not. And, I mean, even when Gorgui and Taj get those three-pointers, you know, you don't feel good about it. I mean, you don't hate them taking them, but you just wonder, like, what else, you know, is better, even though they do hit them pretty well. It's kind of frustrating on the whole, especially once we've seen how good this team can be.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's I want to be careful because they're what, sixth or seventh in offensive efficiency overall for the season. So it's not like they're in the bottom third of the league in terms of scoring, but it just would be nice to see them take a few more like better shots, you know, just get into more of an offensive rhythm where they don't have to, where it doesn't have to be so difficult for them to score. In fact, I remember, you know, John Meyer, our guy who we just had on a couple of weeks ago, he was tweeting last night that, you know, it didn't seem like the Wolves offensively were making the Rockets work defensively.
No.
You know what I mean? Where it was just a lot of isolation stuff. And the Rockets could just kind of sit there and play one-on-one with you. And that's, you know, that worked in their favor because they didn't have to expend a lot of energy. They didn't have to rotate a lot. They didn't have to do a lot of switching. And, you know,
when you're letting the defense get set, and that's the big problem. And what the Rockets do so well is, I mean, they move the ball around, and they got so many mismatches last night, whether it was Eric Gordon being able to take Taj Gibson off the dribble,
yep,
or Chris Paul hitting that three-pointer over for Towns. And, I mean, granted, Towns did stop Chris Paul one-on-one on that drive, and that was incredible. I mean, Paul tried and tried and tried and had to settle for a bad shot eventually over Towns, and it missed. But these are the things that they do, and it's like you watch these other teams, and you're saying, that's what's missing, that type of flow. And I know some people hate watching the Rockets, but it's, to me, I mean, a smarter style of basketball. I mean, you can argue which is better, whatever, and it's totally subjective. But it seems to be a smarter brand of basketball in that you never let the defense get set or get comfortable, and you're always making them think and keeping them on their toes instead of watching a guy dribble for 15 seconds and allowing everyone to get in position, and four other guys are standing still, so the defender's standing still. There's just, it's really a problem in that sense, too.
Let me ask you this. And for the sake of the question, we'll put aside, you know, salaries and how much each guy is making. Should Tyus be starting?
You know, it's funny. Matt Moore, everyone here probably follows at HP Basketball, so I don't feel like I need to explain who Matt Moore is. But
yeah,
he tweeted out, how long before Tyus Jones takes the job from Jeff Teague? And, I mean, when you watch this style of play and what Tyus can do, I mean, he's a strong finisher at the rim. He takes smart shots. I mean, if he's taking a shot in traffic, he's probably finishing it. He hit 3 out of 5 three-pointers last night. And, I mean, the ball moves so well when he's on the floor. So even though Tyus had 0 assists last night, I don't think nights like that are, you know, that doesn't truly capture what he does in a given game. And what's kind of annoying, I think, is a good word for it, is that T can have a night like last night where he's 3 for 8, has 5 boards and 3 assists, and you go, oh, that's probably okay-ish. Well, I mean, he also had 3 turnovers and was -22. So why don't you just play Tyus more? Why don't you just say, all right, this is going to be one of those T games. We're going to go to Tyus and stop the bleeding and, you know, stay in this game and not lose any momentum or not fall further behind.
Yeah, because I'm watching the game last night, and they start the fourth quarter. They're down 19 to start the fourth quarter because Eric Gordon hit that crazy three at the end of the third. And it's 89-70 at the start of the fourth quarter. And then the Wolves open the fourth quarter on a 12-2 run to close to within 9. And it's 91-82. And then they got a little bit closer, and then it ended up being like, you know, a 10-point game. But the Wolves are hanging around, and you're thinking, okay, there's about 6 minutes left. They're right within striking range. They can get a turnover and a couple shots here. Maybe close the gap down to, you know, 6 or 7. Then they might have a chance to come back and win this game. And while this is going on, while they're sort of closing the gap, Tyus is in the game while this is happening. And then he goes back to Teague. You know, he pulls Tyus out of the game, and Teague comes back in. And then the Rockets sort of open things up again. And again, I'm not trying to like trash Jeff Teague here, but again, to your point, it's like, why go away from what's working at that time? Like,
exactly.
If the offense is flowing well and Tyus is out there and he's sort of orchestrating the offense, why pull him out? You know, for the sake of trying to win the game. Why not just leave him in there because things are clicking right now? And I feel like, you know, Tibbs is just not really willing to sort of go with the flow of things. He sort of has, you know, he has his idea of how many minutes each guy is going to play and his rotations, and he's going to stick to it no matter what. And I don't know, man. I don't know.
I do think you have to be a little more adaptable than that. I think you're right. And I mean, I get, you know, that you probably can't have Tyus Jones playing 12 minutes straight, especially against a team like the Rockets.
Right.
Who really do try to wear you out and, you know, try to beat you inside and out. I mean, but at the 6 minute mark, sure, pull Tyus out for a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Let him, you know, get a rest and then have him back in for the home stretch of the game and, you know, try to have a chance in this thing rather than trying to, you know, force something from Jeff Teague when he's just not feeling it. And it's, you know, one really frustrating thing about Teague last night was that he took 1 3-pointer last night. This was a guy who was hitting 40% earlier in the season. That's not enough. And I mean, maybe that's just, you know, like the team thing that we're talking about. It's too much as one guy pounding the ball for 15 seconds and then forcing up an ugly shot. But he should, you know, be taking smarter shots on that rather than trying to, you know, force off balance leaning floaters, you know, when he's having a rough night or going against Chris Paul, who is one of the best point guard defenders of his generation. It just doesn't make any sense to me why, you know, you just can't go back to Tyus in that situation. It's not like Chris Paul is actually smaller than Tyus Jones too. So it's not like, well, it's a big physical point guard. I mean, this is, should be a matchup that, you know, Tyus can handle.
Yeah. And you know, I also thought, remember when they signed Jeff Teague, I thought, okay, this is going to work out okay because, you know, Teague is a little bit more of a scorer than Rubio is, and he can probably play off the ball a little bit more because you figure Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins will probably have the ball in their hands a lot more. And that, you know, Teague will be able to sort of adapt and play off the ball, and he doesn't need to have the ball in his hands all the time to be effective. But
he sure does.
Yeah, it kind of seems like he sure does need to have the ball in his hands to really be effective. And I don't know. I mean, Teague's a good player, and he's had some nights this year where, you know, you look at it and you say, man, I don't know if they would have won if he hadn't, you know, made those couple shots, or if he hadn't contributed what he brought to the table that night, they probably wouldn't have won that game. So it's not like he hasn't been valuable this year, but it does seem like there just needs to be some tweaking to his game and sort of the offense overall to make it a little bit more fluid, and so that they don't, you know, when the time comes when they have to play a Golden State or a Houston, that they can actually have a legit chance of competing and winning the game.
Because even right now with, you know, San Antonio essentially having Kawhi out indefinitely this season, we don't know if we'll see him again. So, I mean, there's the opportunity for the Wolves to jump up.
Yeah.
But you really don't get the sense that the Rockets are, you know, they're in danger of catching the Rockets.
Right.
And it's like you really see, you know, what this team's limit or their ceiling is as they're currently constructed, as they're currently playing.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. So, I mean, to answer the question, you know, long answer to the short question, Teague should probably still start, but there's got to be a little bit more flexibility, right? Between Teague and Tyus. I mean, there's got to be, Tyus has been such a positive for the team that you got to find a way to get him on the floor more than what he is when Teague is there too. So I don't know. It's
Well, here's the other thing too. I mean, think about this. If you put Tyus in the starting lineup and you add Jeff Teague to the bench, does that make the bench better? I mean, if you're worried about consistency, I don't think having another ball dominant guard on the second unit helps them much at all.
Right, because you also have to think about, you know, the backcourt of Jeff Teague and Jamal Crawford, who's very ball dominant. You know, I mean, that's something you'd have to consider. But I would like to see Tibbs sort of mix it up a little bit more. Like you keep Teague as your starter, but he's got to find ways to, because Tyus plays so well with the starters, and because, you know, that sort of unit has been effective and has played really well when it's been together, that you've got to find time throughout the course of a game to have that mix in there, to have Tyus out there with the starters, even if Tyus is not actually starting in your actual starting lineup. So,
I mean, I think Tyus needs to probably play about 5 to 6 minutes each quarter.
Yeah.
In all honesty, at this point.
Yeah.
Just to keep everything going.
Yeah. I'm totally with you there.
Here's what you may have missed on a recent Purple podcast.
When you end a game like that, when you go up a 17-0 at halftime and dominate as much as the Vikings did, and then it's slowly but surely the lead gets smaller and smaller, and you say, okay, this is Drew Brees, and Drew Brees is coming back, and then the Saints do just enough things to leave the window of opportunity open for Keenum and the Vikings offense, and they come back and win like that, you finally start to say to yourself, there's something to be capitalized on here that goes beyond the norm. I mean, the ending of that game, as you described, what the safety was thinking, I don't know. But it all sort of fits together with what the season has been about, and that is a really good defense and a good football team that's opportunistic, and somehow there's like magic dust or something. Like it goes beyond the explanation of, oh yeah, that's just the Vikings.
You can find the Purple Podcast on iTunes, Podcast One, or 1500ESPN.com's podcast page.
Okay, so one interesting bit of news before we get out of here. So apparently Kemba Walker is available in a trade, although it sounds like Kemba has...
Not as in he's like single and looking to mingle, right, or something like that, right? Not
right.
That kind of available.
Right. But apparently the Hornets have made him available in a trade, although it sounds like he's not really interested in leaving. Like he likes Charlotte and he likes playing for the Hornets and he likes being there and doesn't really want to leave. So we'll see how that goes. But of course, naturally, when that rumor pops up, you know, the day after Jeff Teague has a bad game in Houston, of course, the question is naturally going to pop up that, oh, you know, maybe the Wolves will get involved. And I don't see it happening at all. With that said, though, I told you in a text before we take it, like I love Kemba Walker. I've mm-hmm. been a big fan of him for a long time, even like back to his UConn days when they went on the run for that national championship, where basically from like the start of their conference tournament, like if UConn had lost another game, they were basically, their season was going to be done, or, you know, they were going to be in the NIT or something like that. And they just,
he was incredible.
Yeah, he was incredible. He basically put that team on his back, him and Jeremy Lamb, ironically, and of course their teammates in Charlotte now. But
only one of them is really good though.
Yeah, that's true. But so,
and like the Kemba, and sorry to cut you off there.
No, go ahead.
He has a nice contract.
Yes.
I mean, he's owed $24 million over the next two seasons. That's it. Because he signed his deal right before Ricky Rubio did and well before all the TV money came in. And I think one thing that a lot of Hornets players, or Hornets players, Hornets fans missed when I was covering them for At the Hive / Rufus on Fire when they were still the Bobcats was that they're, oh, well, you know, he's not a true point guard. His assist numbers aren't that great. And yeah, you look at it, 5.5 career assists a game as his average. But on the floor, he accounts for 28-29% of the team's total assists. So, I mean, that tells me that, you know, there are a lot of system reasons why he doesn't. And he's such a good scorer, too.
Yes.
That, I mean, he can really bend a defense. And that step back is lethal. I mean, I love Kemba Walker.
Yeah, which is really weird because, you know, you mentioned the contract. It's such a friendly contract. It might be like one of the, in terms of just, when you weigh in, you know, how good he is and how much money he's making, it's probably the friendliest contract in the NBA, which is makes it really weird to me that the Hornets would even, like, want to part with him. Because he doesn't seem to me, he doesn't seem to be the guy that's really, like, holding them back from no. from taking that next step. Like, he's on a friendly contract. He's a really good player. He's still young. I mean, he's, what, 20? I think he's 27. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't understand like why the Hornets are looking at moving him, I guess. I don't know. Maybe because they think they can get a lot in return for him and they
right.
Maybe they think they can attach the Batum contract to any sort of deal that they do.
Well, I think their other problems are the Batum contract that they got him at the wrong time. I mean, as nice of a player as Batum was in Portland in his first year, I mean, he's had injuries, he struggled a little bit. And paying Dwight Howard $23.5 million. But I mean, the Michael Kidd-Gilchrist contract isn't even bad, $13 million. Marvin Williams at 13.1. So you wonder if the Hornets are selling off if, you know, what they would want for Marvin Williams, because that contract isn't that bad either. And I mean, those are really their only big problems. But you look at it and you say Kemba Walker for $12 million. I mean, if some team wants to part with the first for that or a young player, I mean, I could see why he's the first one that they're offering up.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, hypothetically speaking, again, I don't think it's going to happen at all. But if you were the Wolves and you wanted to trade for Kemba Walker, what would you, what are you willing to part with?
Oh, I've thought about this a little bit. I mean, you wouldn't do Andrew Wiggins, right? Because that would leave you with too weird of a roster.
Yeah, you'd be pretty. I mean, your wing depth, which is already iffy right now, would take an even bigger hit.
Because Wiggins is going to have. So this season, Wiggins is still on his rookie scale.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be $7 million plus.
Yeah, his new deal doesn't kick in till next season.
The thing is, it's so weird to make the money fit.
Yeah.
Because I think they can trade Shabazz. I think so, because he has a second year option.
Yeah, but he's got...
Do they want him to opt in next year? Probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
It's just so tough. I mean, and I think you'd have to move Teague, and then... I mean, that keeps Tyus in a backup role, but I mean, if you can get Kemba Walker,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you worry too much about that. I think Kemba Walker and Tyus Jones is a better platoon than Jeff Teague. And that's again, not being critical of Teague, it's just saying that Kemba Walker's a better player. I think that's all I'm really saying is that more about Walker than Teague.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Hornets would do that, and then they would still have to make money match probably.
You'd probably have to throw in the Oklahoma City pick.
Which they don't really want to do, especially if they make the playoffs and their own pick goes to Atlanta.
Yep.
I mean, it's a tough position, but I mean, I'd trade Teague for Kemba Walker.
Yeah.
I would probably think about Gorgie Jang. I mean, because Jang is almost the same age as Kemba. We forget how old Gorgie actually is. He's not, you know, the guy who came out after, you know, 1 year at Louisville. I mean, he's... 1990, he is... Oh, Gorgie had a birthday yesterday.
Oh, happy birthday, Gorgie. Yeah, and happy...
Gorgie's
happy...
28, though.
Okay.
He's older than Kemba.
And happy belated to Tom Thibodeau, by the way, who just celebrated his 60th the other day as well. But...
What do you think Tom Thibodeau does for his birthday?
Look at film. That would be my guess, is that he looks at film. That's his...
Holds a two-a-day.
That's his birthday present.
Two days in film study.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, happy birthday to Tibbs. Happy birthday to Gorgie as well. I just think it. Like I said, I don't think it would happen. I don't think it. I think it would be really difficult. But Kemba Walker would be pretty cool. He would be pretty cool in a Wolves uniform with this.
Would group. You? If it made sense, would you trade Andrew Wiggins for Kemba? Not knowing what could happen after 2019. I guess we don't know what's going to happen after 2019 anyway. Like, Jimmy Butler right. could leave. Todd could say, I'm going somewhere else. I mean, a lot of things could happen.
Yeah, a lot could happen there. I mean, I think if there was a little bit more wing depth, like if the Wolves had and again, I'm not trying to knock Justin Patton or anything, but if the Wolves had gotten Kyle Kuzma at 16, but again, who's thinking Kyle Kuzma was going to be as good as he has been as a rookie?
No one at all.
Nobody thought that. So I mean, it's tough to play revisionist history there with that. But if the Wolves had said, "Hey, we'll take this Kyle Kuzma kid, and we see him, and he's playing well," then I would probably feel a little bit more comfortable with trading Wiggins. The problem is right now is you don't know what's going to happen beyond 2019, and you already have a lot of issues in terms of just wing depth. And if you move Wiggins now for anything, unless you're getting another wing in return, you're really crushing your already thin wing depth, and I don't think
you know what happens.
It helps you at all.
You know what happens, right? Shabazz or Marcus George's Hunt becomes the starter.
Yeah,
and it's probably Boz, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true. But it's kind of fun to hypothesize on some of these things, right? I mean, it's just, you know, news.
Yeah, we don't get to do that a lot. I like it better than the idea of Lou Williams. I mean, I think Lou Williams and Jamal Crawford on the same bench would be awful, and I bet the Clippers would ask for a first rounder for Lou Williams.
Yeah, probably. Oh, by the way, before we get out of here, we were going to talk about the fact that Chris Paul didn't get suspended for last night's game.
This is so stupid.
Despite the fact that he was basically the one that I love how Trevor Ariza and Gerald Green are like the sacrificial lambs to be like suspended for that whole situation at Staples Center the other night, even though it was Chris Paul that led them down to the Clippers locker room in that, you know, whatever that back way or that secret passageway or whatever the hell it was. Yet Chris Paul doesn't get any sort of repercussions for it. It's crazy.
Or James Harden. James Harden was right there too.
Right.
And I think the funniest part of all this is that apparently Clint Capella was used as the Trojan horse. Like, oh, hey, do you guys have like a cup of sugar while the other guy snuck in the back door? But also that everyone started saying, oh, no, James and Chris Paul are trying to calm down Ariza. Who is the one who was going back and forth with Blake and Austin Rivers on the sideline? Yeah,
they were trying to be like, peacemakers.
You calm them down so much, you let them down the back hallway and let them in the locker room. Like, you're either really bad at it or you're lying. And I'm assuming nobody's that bad at doing anything. So you're probably just lying.
Yeah, that just reeked to me of, hey, the Rockets have a national TV game on Thursday night, and we don't want to suspend their two best players and have them not be available for Thursday night's game against Minnesota.
Well, they suspend those guys for two games. They missed the Raptors on Saturday, and that's a national TV game too, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, good grief. I love the NBA, man. Sometimes, and it's not just the NBA. Like, the NFL does this. The NHL does this. You know, Major League Baseball does this. They all, you know, everything, it comes down to, you know, TV ratings and all of that stuff. So, yeah, it's...
No one's in this business to lose money.
Yeah.
Or to not make as much money as possible.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, good talk, man. And we'll be back at it next week. And I don't know, I'm going to try and get to the Raptors game tomorrow with the Toronto Raptors coming to town, so that should be a fun one.
The new and improved DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, exactly. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast at podcast1.com. You can also search us on iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves. Give us a friendly rating. And, of course, you can always find us at 1500ESPN.com. For Derek James, I am Manny Hill. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your Wolves basketball. And we'll talk to you next week. We got Doc Coyle. Our buddy Doc Coyle is going to join us on the show next week, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, enjoy your Wolves basketball, and we'll talk to you next time.